Institute for the Study of Zionism. This was a blatantly anti-Semitic outfit that was run for Gamal Abdel Nasser by a guy named Johann von Liers. Von Liers, who later converted to Islam under the name Amin Omar von Liers, had been in charge of anti-Semitic propaganda for Goebbels' propaganda ministry in the Third Reich. He then, under the Skorzeny mission to the Middle East, got set up as the head of the Institute for the Study of Zionism under Nasser, and he was very close to an individual in this time who was also very active in Nasser's Egypt. This is the aforementioned Haji Amin al-Husseini, major in the SS, first leader of the Palestinian National Movement, and the founder of the World Muslim Congress, again, which was one of the major vehicles in the anti-Soviet Afghan War of the 1980s. Now, one of the associates of Johann von Liers in Egypt, under this Nazi emigre community that had was inextricably linked with the operations of Nasser's government, was a Swiss-born German Nazi named Alfred Huber, last name H-U-B-E-R. That's one of the names you're going to want to remember. He converted to Islam. He was very closely associated with Johann von Liers. He also converted to Islam and took the name Ahmed Huber. He is now, jumping ahead to the timeline, because people are wondering, what is Dave talking about? What? You know, forget it. Ahmed Huber, as revealed in the Financial Times of November 9th of this year, is an associate of the Bin Laden Organization. He's also very closely associated with the NPD, the top German Nazi party, which in turn is the main German Nazi contact point for the National Alliance, the parent organization of National Vanguard Books, which publishes Serpent's Walk. Ahmed Huber has admitted being associated with people from the Bin Laden Organization, though he denies any involvement in terrorist activities, and he dates back to the von Liers Skorzeny mission in Egypt at this time in the 1950s. Interestingly enough, Huber sits on the board of directors of a fund called Al-Taqwa. That's spelled capital A-L, capital T-A-Q-W-A. It's Arabic for fear of God. This is one of the organizations that has been cited as one of the funding conduits for the Bin Laden organization, for Al-Qaeda. Interestingly enough, in the immediate aftermath of the 9/11 attacks, Al-Taqwa management was being investigated by the Swiss authorities in conjunction with the suspicious stock trading in various stocks run the run-up to the 9/11 attacks, and specifically Munich Reinsurance, which has 22% of the liability in the World Trade Center, Allianz, and or Swiss Reinsurance, which has 22% of the liability in the World Trade Center, Munich Re, the largest reinsurance company in the world, and Allianz were among the stocks that were traded. So too were the parent companies of United Airlines and American Airlines as well. But Al-Taqwa is one of the companies being investigated in connection with the stock manipulation. On its board of directors is Ahmed Ney Alfred Huber, associate of the NPD, and an individual whose genesis runs all the way back to Nasser's Egypt, Johann von Liers, and Otto Skorzeny. In addition, Al-Taqwa is now a member of an organization called Nada Management. Not, by the way, it's not a reference to Ralph Nada, who helped to put George Bush in power. It's rather a reference to Yosef Nada, an associate of Ahmed Huber, and the individual for whom Nada Management is named. Yosef Nada, until recently, was also on the board of directors of a prestigious UN Italian-based think tank on whose scientific committee sits Henry Kissinger and Mikhail Gorbachev, along with Yosef Nada. So some of this appears to be, you know, way out. The corridors of power are really not far to see, not far from the events of 9/11. So again, remembers what's taking place in the 1950s. Otto von Bolschmann, who conspires with Philby, and Ibn Saud, again, a good buddy of and business associate of Mohammed bin Laden, Osama's father, and the head, Ibn Saud, of the Wahhabi sect. Ibn Saud conspires with Philby and von Bolschmann to basically get the British discredited. Later, Ibn Saud and Philby conspire with Alan Dulles, who's been conspiring with the Bush family to help mask the Bush family's Nazi assets. After the war, Dulles helps to arrange the importation of many of these people into the United States, including Otto von Bolschmann, who then gets set up in business at an electronics firm called PCI. One of his proteges is Helena von Damm. To give you an idea of where this is eventually going to lead, it's eventually going to lead to hell. And we're all going to be following this trail, I'm afraid. But eventually, one of the subsidiaries of TCI, International Imaging Systems, was spun off, and it became part of Stanford Technology Group that was headed up by Albert Hakim and used by Albert Hakim for many of the Iran-Contra machinations. Helena von Damm became Ronald Reagan's special executive director for presidential personnel. She drew up the lists from which all of Ronald Reagan's cabinet appointments were made. She was a protege of Otto von Bolschwing, in charge of, quote, Jewish matters, unquote, for the SS. She also worked for some of Hakim's subsidiaries in Europe. So again, if this appears to be, you know, long ago and far away, and what the hell am I talking about, all these German names and these Arab names, and what does this have to do with anything? It has a lot to do with everything. And that's one of the reasons why I started with the future, Serpent's Walk, published by the publishing arm of the top NDP associate group in the United States, the National Alliance, covered some of the Bush family, Saudi, Bin Laden connections, and I'm trying to trace this up now from the past through to the present so that people can understand, once again, the politics of the elders of oil. Now, this group continued to, I guess you could say, shed virus and begin to spread the plague. What we're going to do now is to jump up to the 1980s. Now, Jimmy Carter was, I should probably jump back to an event that happened in the early 70s. Eventually, this Nazi milieu, which had been used by the Republican Party to garner the Eastern European ethnic vote in the presidential election years, was formally incorporated as a branch of the Republican Party. This took place under Richard Nixon, again, who was in charge of the Crusade for Freedom, the most inappropriately named Crusade for Freedom, administered by Alan Dulles. And ultimately, this Nazi wing of the Republican Party was formally incorporated into the party. The person who presided, by the way, we should have some more chairs here shortly. If you want to come in or try to stand or something. I've already given up my seat here, so if you're worried about the lack of seating, we'll see if we can accommodate. We have somebody out looking for some more chairs. Any results? No. Anyway, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, when this Nazi emigre milieu was formally incorporated as a branch of the Republican Party, was George Herbert Walker Bush, the father of the current president. Now we're going to jump up to the late 1970s and early 1980s. George Bush, of course, eventually became director of the Central Intelligence Agency, having been appointed to that position by Gerald Ford, who in turn had been appointed vice president by Richard Nixon, and when Nixon resigned, Ford pardoned him. One of his last acts, George Bush's last acts as director of Central Intelligence, was to submit a report which had been drawn up by petroleum industry elements within the CIA, petroleum industry-related elements within the CIA, that forecast a coming petroleum shortage all over the world. It said that oil shortage was going to be, that petroleum production was going to be dropping. This was going to, in turn, lead to a worldwide oil shortage. The Saudis just didn't have enough oil. And in particular, the Soviet Union was supposedly running out of oil. What this was intended to do was to prod the incoming president. And this appears to have been the handing of this report to Jimmy Carter was perhaps the very last act of George Bush as CIA director. It was intended to promote Jimmy Carter and the incoming administration into stimulating oil production, basically drilling every place and any place, and into permitting the petroleum industry to raise prices in order to naturally stimulate production. Instead, Jimmy Carter pushed for energy conservation. This did not sit well with the petroleum industry. In 1978, the younger George Bush ran for office for the first time under a platform of, surprise, surprise, boosting petroleum production. That was his very first congressional campaign, unsuccessful, took place in 1978. The elder George Bush, of course, went on to become the vice presidential candidate in 1980. And in 1980, the election was swung by a number of things. For one thing, the United States had been humiliated by a terrorist incident involving Islamic extremists in Iran. That was the taking of the United States hostages from the U.S. Embassy in Tehran in 1979. We now know that the Reagan-Bush campaign, including George Bush and the aforementioned William Casey, who handled the State Department machinations under the Crusade for Freedom, was in touch with the Khomeini forces in Iran all along. We also know that, in fact, the oil shortage, quote-unquote, of 1980, which in turn led to a huge increase in prices at the gas pump. It led to exacerbating lines of which people were waiting to get gas. We now know that that was phony, that that was arranged in considerable measure not only by the petroleum industry but by the Saudis, by the House of Saud, so to speak, who deliberately restricted petroleum production. That also resulted in the increase in petroleum prices and the frustration on the part of the American people with rising prices, inflation, and with America's humiliation at the hands of these Islamic extremist terrorists led to Reagan and Bush being elected in 1980. It also led to the huge increases in military spending in order to defend the Middle East against a supposed Soviet military invasion. We now know that, in fact, the Soviet Union was not running out of oil. They had plenty of oil. The Saudis were and are awash in oil. The Soviet Union was the world's largest oil producer at that time and the world's second largest oil exporter behind Saudi Arabia. So this was basically BS, but it was very successful BS, and George Bush and his figurehead Ronald Reagan came into office. Now, at this time, Helena von Dahn, who is a protege of Otto von Bolschwing, becomes director of executive director for presidential personnel. Basically, she had two different titles, very similar. I confuse them. She was a protege of Otto von Bolschwing, who had conspired with Saud and with Jack Philby to discredit the British and secure the Middle Eastern oil reserves. Helena von Dahn selects the list from which all of Ronald Reagan's cabinet appointments were made. One of those, by the way, was his special envoy to the Middle East, who was a fellow named Donald Rumsfeld, now Secretary of Defense, and highly visible in the late unpleasantness in Afghanistan and ongoing unpleasantness in Afghanistan and elsewhere. Now, we should remember... Yep. Which tiny little part? Rumsfeld. Helena von Dahn draws up the lists from which all of Ronald Reagan's cabinet appointments were made. Now, again, for listeners that are interested, the people who aren't on the web, there are still some printouts available. And this is that's footnoted in, for the record, 332, B as in Bush, B as in Bormann, B as in von Bolschwing. And that is footnoted. It's also excerpted from RFA 30. And the precise references, I mean, I'll be willing to, you know, fill in the blanks as I realize this is an awfully tall glass of water to drink at one sitting. But those are available in the back with sourcing. It's why I had them printed up. They're also available on the World Wide Web. So if people are wondering, you know, what is all this stuff about? Good question. That's why I've laid out the descriptions with the sourcing. Now, bear in mind that terrorism, you know, the war on terror, et cetera, so this is nothing new. We remember watching the television coverage of 9/11, and it was, you know, America attacked or America strikes back or, you know, America this or that. The memory that this called up for me was America held hostage while the hostages were being held prisoner by the Iranians, humiliating America, and again, Islamic extremists. We were told that America was being held hostage. And the Khomeini regime, the Islamic extremists that still hold power in Iran, as well as Muammar Gaddafi, were the terrorist bete noir, so to speak, of the time. These were the international terrorists who threatened us. It turned out that the Turple Wilson operation, which was an off-the-shelf intelligence operation, had helped to not only arm and train Gaddafi's terrorist cadre, but that his intelligence service had been put together by Heinrich Mueller and the Gestapo contingent that also put together the Egyptian infrastructure under Otto Skorzeny. Muammar Gaddafi, though, along with the Islamic extremists or Islamic fundamentalists in Iran, were the terrorist menace, and we had to do something to combat terrorism. So the vice president, that's George Bush, former CIA director who submitted the petroleum report to Jimmy Carter and who helped to arrange with the Saudis the phony gas shortage of 1980, George Bush puts together the vice president's task force on combating terrorism. And basically, they are a series of recommendations were put together, and as a result of these recommendations, a series of interagency governmental networks were created to combat terrorism. Elements from justice, from CIA, from the Pentagon, and all branches of government were put together so that basically they could facilitate the war on terror. And the person who was placed in charge of this war on terror was George Bush, the former director of the CIA. Get this. This is distracting.
I don't want to look at it.
I don't either. We're going to get a chance to look at far too much of that, I'm afraid, as time goes by. I had the reference to Casablanca there. Who knows when the next plane is going to be leaving or where it's going to be headed, you know? You never know when a plane just might land these days. But in any event, the vice president's task force on combating terrorism was being headed up by George Bush. God bless you. What this basically was, it turned out to be George Bush's own private intelligence service in order to bypass the usual governmental machinery in order to effect covert operations. One of the things that was accomplished through the Iran-Contra affair and the vice president's task force on combating terrorism was the shipping of arms to the very Islamic fundamentalists who had held the hostages in the first goddamn place, which along with the phony gas shortage of 1980 had propelled Ronald Reagan and George Bush into power. It was also used to arm Saddam Hussein, the other, you know, terrorist, extremist, horrible person in the Middle East, whom we were told we had to oppose, and in fact, we were arming Saddam Hussein through these very same networks that were put together to supposedly fight terrorism. And bear in mind that the Iran-Contra affair was realized in part through Stanford Technology, one of whose subsidiaries was International Imaging Systems, which had been spun off from TCI, which was von Bolschfeng's electronics company, and that Helena von Damm had worked for Otto von Bolschfeng. She then worked for Albert Hakim, who owned Stanford Technology. The reporter who broke that story, Pete Carey, came across TCI and von Bolschfeng while following Edwin Wilson associate Frank Turple's trail through the Silicon Valley. And, of course, Turple and Wilson helped to arm Gaddafi, again, the terrorist menace that we needed to form this vice president's task force to combat, right? Of course, he's still in power, as are the Iranian fundamentalists, and as is Saddam Hussein. So, obviously, that the war on terror didn't really work too well. Now, another thing that was going on in the 1980s, while the vice president is helping to combat terrorism, quote-unquote, and in fact supporting the very terrorist networks that we were told we were going to be fighting against, a war takes place in Afghanistan. The former Soviet Union invades Afghanistan, and the largest U.S. covert operation is then undertaken against the Soviets. This was undertaken in conjunction with elements of British intelligence. It was largely underwritten by the Saudis, and the major vehicle for the realization of the anti-Soviet Afghan war of the 1980s was the World Muslim Congress. That's the organization that was founded by Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, the SS Major, the associate of, going all the way back to the 1930s, Ibn Saud, Otto von Bolschfeng, Jack Philby. It's the same Haj Amin al-Husseini who was very active in Nasser's Egypt along with Johann von Leers, Ahmed Ney Alfred Huber of Al-Taqwa Management, one of the alleged funding sources for Al-Qaeda, and the World Muslim Congress, again, in considerable measure funded by the Saudi government. Head in the 1980s, and I think even up through the early 90s, is Dr. Inamullah Khan, a Pakistani. It's heavily involved with the Pakistani Islamic fundamentalists. And the World Muslim Congress, among their many delightful public relations efforts, they took Holocaust denial literature and mailed it to every member of the British Parliament and the United States Congress. They also hired an American, the Saudi government hired an American neo-Nazi, William Grinstead, as one of their top Washington lobbyists. And again, if some of my ruminations about the underground Reich can be out, right, Dave, you know, sure, you'll see those, you know, Dave sees Nazis everywhere, and it really isn't all that hard to find. And that's why I'm tracing some of these networks all the way back to the 1930s and the politics of the Elders of Oil, George Bush, the Georges Bush, Prescott Bush, George Herbert Walker, Alan Dulles, Otto von Bolschwing, Helena von Baum, Albert Hakim, and this whole delightful crew that whose legacy we are currently grappling with. One of the major institutions that was involved with the funding of the Afghan war was the BCCI, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, which was essentially an intelligence front. One of the principal families involved with this were the Bin Mahfouz family of Saudi Arabia, whose North American business representative was James R. Batt, the same North American business representative who represented the Bin Laden family and who helped to capitalize George W. Bush's first oil company. We should note that the Afghan war against the Soviets ultimately was successful, and that it saw the genesis as warriors, as combatants, of not only Osama bin Laden. Now, he's the son of Mohammed bin Laden, who was a close friend and business associate of King Ibn Saud, the founder of the modern Saudi state, which is the ultimate oxymoron, actually, talking about the modern Saudi state. And bear in mind all the connections that I've tried to state several times in order to help clear up any of the confusion that might necessarily result from this lexicon that I'm presenting here. Ibn Saud's a friend of Mohammed bin Laden. It's kind of like the old song about the hip bone connected to the thigh bone. You know, if you follow the connections, eventually you're going to wind up with the whole skeleton. And at the top is the SS Death's Head, I guess you could say. But bear in mind that Osama bin Laden's father, Mohammed bin Laden, is very close to Ibn Saud. That's how they got their start in the Saudi Arabian construction business. They built the shrines for Mecca and Medina. They did a lot of things. By the way, in the 1990s, one of the bombings attributed to the bin Laden organization was the destruction of the Khobar Towers Air Force Barracks in Saudi Arabia, which 19 Air Force personnel were killed. The contract to rebuild that was awarded to Saudi bin Laden. And so there's a disgusting bit of back scratching, but it's really not all that difficult from, not all that different, I should say, from what we've seen so far. Now, in the 1980s, again, you've got the Saudi effort against the Afghans. You've got Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of the first World Trade Center bombing, and Osama bin Laden working in Afghanistan along with the Grand Mufti founded and Saudi government and Saudi royal family funded World Muslim Congress. And that is the very, very first Afghan war. That's the first modern Afghan war, I guess you could say, in the 1980s. I would also note, well, let's bring this one up through the 90s. How many would like to take a break? Just to take a break. You guys are doing better than I am. I wouldn't mind taking a short break. A few of you, you know, most of you are ready to sit here and get, and it's warm enough in here without me adding to the hot air, which I'm adept at doing. If you want to take a short break, I wouldn't mind just to wet my whistle. Or we can just continue, because you know there's more to come, so to speak. And then we'll take a break and stretch, and I can take questions or whatever.
Let's take five.
You want to take five now? Let's take a short break. We'll be back. It is now about 18 minutes to 9. We'll be back at 10 minutes to 9. Maybe yakety-yak after the talk outside, but we'll see. I still have about 8 unread newspapers, and I have to put together a show to be recorded at 5 o'clock tomorrow, so that on Monday I can write the sources and I'll get the description up on the web so that we can continue to do this. But in any event, we're up through the 1980s, coming into the 1990s, George Herbert Walker Bush is president. He, of course, is one of the people who is heavily involved with the Carlyle Group, capitalized in part by the bin Laden family. The genesis of these connections goes all the way back. I'm not going to run the names down for you. We got, you know, Ibn Saud hooked up with Mohammed bin Laden, hooked up with Jack Philby, hooked up with Otto von Bolschwing, hooked up with Haj Amin al-Husseini, hooked up with Alan Dulles, hooked up with the Bush family, and they're all hooked up with Hitler. And that is the essential connection. Now, George Bush is president. He is, of course, an oil man, along with his then Secretary of State, James Baker, another wonderful human being. They basically take a group of, quote, moderate, unquote, Palestinians who were brought to the United States, and they were coached by the CIA in the latest PR techniques. One of those, by the way, is a woman who's very visible these days. She's sort of a darling of the progressive sector, a regular on KPFA. Her name is Hanan Ashrawi. She is a James Baker protege and CIA-trained PR person who, along with the rest of this group who were nicknamed by the CIA Baker's Dozen, constituted the Palestinian negotiating team that were negotiating on behalf of Yasser Arafat in connection with the Oslo Accords. By the way, we should mention that it was when Otto Skorzeny was on this Galen/CIA mission in Egypt, which saw the genesis of, among other people, Johann von Leers as the head of Nasser's Institute for the Study of Zionism, one of his associates, Alfred, now Ahmed Huber, who was also associated with al-Taqwa, one of the funding sources for al-Qaeda, also being investigated in connection with the stock market manipulation. One of the people who was an associate of Otto Skorzeny in this period was Yasser Arafat. In fact, he was Skorzeny's protege, and he succeeded SS Major Haji Amin al-Husseini as the head of the Palestinian National Movement. The first Palestinian terrorists were put together under Skorzeny's direction under the operational auspices of Haji Amin of Yasser Arafat, and one of his top associates was a guy named Hassan Salameh. Hassan Salameh had worked for the Grand Mufti in World War II. He was the person who was used by the Grand Mufti to conduct an operation on behalf of the Third Reich in which the wells of Tel Aviv were going to be poisoned, this in order to signal an uprising by the Arabs against the British in order to divert British troops to put down the uprising and divert them away from the forthcoming offensive in the Ardennes, which became known as the Battle of the Bulge. Later, Hassan Salameh conducted the first military raid against the Israelis after the UN declaration set up Israel. He ultimately was assassinated by an Israeli car bomb. His son, Ali Hassan Salameh, became one of the top operatives on behalf of Black September and was the mastermind of the 1972 Olympics massacre in Munich, Germany. The security director for that was a guy named Hans Langemann, who later became an official. He was an official with the BND, the successor to the Galen organization. He later became an official with the Bundesamt für Verfassungsschutz, or Office for the Protection of the Constitution, a domestic German intelligence agency, and in that capacity provided an alibi for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann in connection with the Munich Oktoberfest bombing of 1980. He also, Ali Hassan Salameh, that is, was also a protege of François Genoux, another operative on behalf of the Third Reich, very much connected with some of these Islamic extremist slash Nazi slash petroleum connections. And again, bear in mind the title of this lecture, Networking, the politics of the elders of oil. That's why I started way back, with the substantive timeline in the 1930s, because to understand the entity that is at work here, and to understand how the corridors of power are being lubricated with petroleum, I think it's important to understand these connections and the networking that has taken place. Now, again, in the late 80s and early 90s, James Baker and the CIA put together Baker's Dozen, the Palestinian negotiating team that are involved in negotiating on behalf of Yasser Arafat in connection with the Oslo Accords. Other events in the 1990s. One of the people who was operating in the Afghan war against the Soviets, and who also was thereby associated with the milieu of the World Muslim Congress, founded by Haji Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti, and funded by the Saudi government, was Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of the first World Trade Center bombing. One of the people convicted in connection with Ramzi Youssef, I'm okay here, was Sheikh Rahman, who was brought into the United States. He was a blind Egyptian imam. He was brought into the United States under the auspices of U.S. intelligence in gratitude for his role in funding, in helping with the Afghan war against the Soviets in the 1980s. Again, that saw the genesis of Osama bin Laden as a warrior. It saw the genesis of Ramzi Youssef as a warrior. And one of the central elements in that anti-Soviet-Afghan war, the World Muslim Congress, which constitutes an element of continuity going all the way back to Haj Amin al-Husseini and this Islamo-fascist, petro-fascist connection that I'm talking about. Another incident that took place, there were a number of terrorist incidents in the 1990s that are worth noting. Oh, by the way, one of Sheikh Rahman's sons is associated with Al-Qaeda in the Philippines. Another interesting connection of Al-Qaeda in the Philippines, and the Philippine is alleged branch of Al-Qaeda, they dispute this, is run by a guy who is a former in-law of Osama bin Laden. He is now divorced from his wife, but is one of Osama's many daughters married this guy whose name escapes me off the top of my head, and one of his associates was one of Sheikh Rahman's sons. Another of Osama bin Laden's daughters married Mullah Omar, the head of the Taliban. So when Bush says basically cough him up, hand him over, he's basically asking an Islamic fundamentalist to turn his father-in-law over to the crusade. That doesn't happen. There are certain drawbacks to turning your father-in-law over to somebody, and I'll leave it to those of you with marital experience to conclude what those might be. One of the things to understand too, remember that BCCI has helped, is one of the major funding sources, funding conduits for the anti-Soviet Afghan war of the 80s. There are a number of links between terrorist incidents seemingly unconnected in the 1990s and events that took place, events that are taking place. One connection I forgot to mention in connection with the Iran-Contra affair was that one of the incident that led to the perceived need to ship arms to Iran was the kidnapping of CIA station chief in Beirut, William Buckley, not to be confused with the columnist of the same name, William F. Buckley, himself with a CIA background and also a member of Skull and Bones, along with both George's Bush and Prescott Bush Sr., and also Henry Neal Mallon, the head of Dresser Industries. The guy who kidnapped William Buckley and who allegedly tortured him to death was a guy named Imad Muganaya, last name M-U-G-A-N-I-Y-E-H, and I may be mispronouncing that. Imad Muganaya's name has recently been connected to Al-Qaeda and to two terror bombings in Argentina, the bombing of the Israeli embassy in Argentina in 1992 and the bombing of the AMIA Jewish Cultural Center in 1994 that had served as a repository for records on Nazi war criminals who had emigrated to Argentina. One of the names that emerged in connection with both of those bombings is that of Manzer al-Kassar, the Syrian-born weapons dealer and terrorist who was the principal operator in terms of securing East Bloc arms for the Contras. He utilized BCCI, connected with James R. Bath, connected to the Bin Mahfouz family, connected to the Mowafak Foundation, and James R. Bath, also the North American business representative for the Bin Laden family. Now again, Jesus, this is too much. That's why I've got the descriptions on the web with the sourcing. It looks to me like the copies have already been disseminated here. That's the best I can do. If some of this stuff seems really confusing, it's meant to be confusing. This is a conspiracy, and you're not supposed to be able to figure it out. And there are only a handful of psychos like myself who've busied with themselves with trying to figure some of this stuff out. And I think the sad events of the last couple of months or so have vindicated that concern under the circumstances. But anyway, Manzer al-Kassar, as a Syrian-born terrorist, he was involved with the Achille Lauro hijacking, the bombing of Pan Am 103. The Achille Lauro hijacking, by the way, was investigated by the Republican U.S. attorney at the time, a guy named Rudolph Giuliani, who covered that up. Rudolph Giuliani, in December of 1988, also dismissed charges against a number of key Iran-Contra operatives who had basically been caught smuggling arms to these very terrorists that we were told we were supposed to be opposed to. That, in combination with the bombing of Pan Am 103, which eliminated some U.S. military intelligence operatives who had come across the George Bush-Iran-Contra links to Manzer al-Kassar, it was what I called the December surprise, the politics of terror and the exoneration of the secret team. Rudolph Giuliani helped to basically cover up the Achille Lauro hijacking, He helped to obfuscate, shall we say, the Iran-Contra affair. The U.S. Prosecutor in charge of prosecuting the Pan Am 103 bombing and the BCCI case was Robert Mueller, now head of the FBI. He was appointed in July, and he was, shall we say, less than vigorous in the investigation of BCCI, going to Iran-Contra, going to Manzoor el-Qassar, going to the Afghan support effort, the World Muslim Congress, and backward, forward, and laterally to all of these elements that I've been talking about. Manzoor el-Qassar's name has emerged in connection with both the Israeli embassy bombing in Argentina and the 1994 AMIA bombing. One of the interesting evidentiary tributaries in this is that Imad Mughanaya, linked with al-Qaeda and the kidnapper and alleged torturer of William Buckley, which led to the Iran-Contra affair, is also, his name is also on international warrants in connection with the 1992 Israeli embassy bombing and the 1994 AMIA bombing. An FBI investigation of the AMIA bombing concluded that members of the Argentine security services who were involved with the bombing were also members of an organization called White Aryan Resistance, which numbers among its members Dennis Mahone, an American white supremacist whose name has cropped up in connection with the Oklahoma City bombing, and also Timothy McVeigh himself, who was obviously a perp in the Oklahoma City bombing and who was conveniently executed in June before he could have anything more to say. I would also note that one of the witnesses who was denied the opportunity to testify by Judge Mache in the trial of Timothy McVeigh was a Philippine national named Edwin Angeles, who testified that he had seen Terry Nichols at a meeting in the Philippines with Ramzi Youssef, again, the mastermind of the first World Trade Center attack, an associate along with Osama bin Laden of the Afghan anti-Soviet war of the 1980s, and Ramzi Youssef also connected with an alleged Philippine branch of al-Qaeda, also connected with, among others, Sheikh Rahman's son. And again, Sheikh Rahman, yet another Afghan Arab veteran who was convicted in connection with the World Trade Center bombing. So there are these evidentiary tributaries connecting the AMIA bombing, the 1992 Israeli bombing, the Oklahoma City bombing, and the first World Trade Center bombing. And there is an FBI agent who has wanted to testify in the upcoming retrial of Terry Nichols, who appealed his case, and he has affidavits from 22 different people in Oklahoma who's testified that they saw Timothy McVeigh in combination, or basically associating with Arab men, or men who appeared to be Arabic. And again, one of the things that's been said in connection with the Oklahoma City bombing is, well, let's not jump to conclusions about anything. We thought first that it was Middle Eastern terrorists, and it turned out to be domestic terrorists. In fact, the underground Reich uses both, and there are profound connections between many of these so-called Islamic extremists and the Third Reich dating all the way back to the pre-World War II period. There were two revolts against the British during World War II. One was in Iraq, what now we now call Iraq, led by a guy named Ali Rashid. One of his top followers was a guy named Khairullah al-Tufa, an army officer in the Iraqi army. He is the uncle of and political mentor of Saddam Hussein, who owns Hitler's personal Mercedes, which is said to be one of his favorite automobiles. There was also a revolt against the British in what now is called Iran. That was led by a guy named Fazola Zahedi, who was a Nazi intelligence agent operating on behalf of the Third Reich. The Third Reich, in the post-war period, was also in touch with and operating on behalf of Mossadegh to try to nationalize the British petroleum holdings and drive the British out of the Middle East. And ultimately, Fazola Zahedi, again, a Nazi intelligence agent who led a revolt against the British, unsuccessful in what is now Iran, eventually married one of the Shah's daughters, was instrumental in setting up the Savak, and his son, Ardashir Zahedi, became the Shah's ambassador to the United States. So these are some interesting connections. So when people hear about, well, you know, we've got Middle Eastern terrorists or domestic terrorists, the underground Reich uses both. And one of the elements embodying that fusion, and we got a lot more to cover here before we get up to the present, again, is Ahmed Ney Alfred Huber, associate of Johann von Mier's in the Skorzeny mission in Egypt in the 1950s, associated with the Grand Mufti, an admitted associate of members of the Bin Laden organization, on the board of directors of Al-Taqwa, a Bin Laden funding conduit, according to Justice Department sources, and also a firm being investigated in connection with the stock market manipulation running up to September 11th. Another terrorist incident in the 90s was the bombing of the Khobar Towers barracks, Air Force barracks in Saudi Arabia. 19 servicemen were killed, and the contract, according to many sources, to rebuild Khobar Towers was awarded to the Saudi Bin Laden Company.